There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. Hour number two of Midday Mobile on this Thursday. Glad you're here. Another hour of live local talk. And also hearing in the show open, Councilman Richardson talking about the council and their votes. I have to get to this tomorrow, but it's... You know I love, like, detail. Like, So the passing an ordinance, Mobile City Council, yesterday, because they didn't do it on Tuesday because of Fat Tuesday, and they passed an ordinance about food trucks. Okay, so the food truck regulations, and listen, I feel for like people who pay their property taxes, brick and mortar restaurants, and here's a food truck. I get that, but they listed all the rules around sound trucks. Around food trucks here, and they said like they cannot have loudspeakers and sound amplifiers and music devices. No music around your food truck. But we'll get into that more tomorrow. But that was passed in the city council yesterday. All right. As I mentioned, as we went to the news, joined now by Representative Chip Brown, District 105, and lots to talk about with the rep. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, glad to be here, Sean.
And it's good to talk to you with you. And I, you know, last time we talked, I said, hey, we'll get back together to get an update on a couple of the bills you were talking about last time with us. So I want to run through these and see what happened in the week, the second week there, and what you expect coming up next week on these bills. Let's talk about, first of all, because every time we talk about it, there's a bunch of people text in. People are interested in this Strengthen Alabama Homes funding bill. Can you explain it again, HB 135, and talk about where it sits in the process?
Sure. That actually passed the House last Tuesday.
Okay.
And so it's headed to the Senate. And it will go to insurance in the Senate, and I'll handle it in committee, and then Senator Jack Williams is going to handle it on the floor. And what that bill does is that the way that Strengthen Alabama Homes is funded is it's done twice a year. They get contributions from insurance companies, and those insurance companies fund the program. Well, the problem with the program has always been it's too popular for the amount of money that they have to fund the program. And in one sense, that's a good problem to have because it means it's a good program, but it doesn't get enough people in and then willing, able to participate in it. So what my bill does, I worked with the Department of Insurance after Hurricane Sally. I went up and met with the insurance department and said, hey, how can we clear out this backlog? And we came up with a solution. And what that does is that every year the insurance department is funded by fines and fees from insurance companies. And at the end of the year, though, they give that whatever's left in the budget, they have to give to the general fund. They just put it into the general fund. But what this bill does is for this year, it takes anything above 25% left in the budget and puts that directly into Strengthen Alabama Homes. That will help clear out that backlog. And then also, moving forward, the way that the law is currently, the Department of Insurance can't put money into the program other than what's contributed directly to the program from those insurance companies twice a year. And that's why you'll see them do a lot of roofs, and then they'll stop. And then they'll do roofs, and then they'll stop. Mm-hmm. It's because that they get funded twice a year. So what my bill does is it allows the insurance commissioner to allocate up to 50% of his budget for Strengthen Alabama Homes. And so that will allow for more people into the program moving forward and allow us to clear out that backlog. Right now, there's 1,300 people waiting on strength Alabama homes, fortified roofs, and this will hopefully clear that out. And then moving forward, we'll be able to fund a lot more fortified roofs. I mean, they're important. You know, they cut your insurance premium usually by half. Insurance companies like it because they don't have to pay out as much, and consumers like it because the premium is less and they're less likely to have roof damage during a storm.
Yeah, and
that passed last week, and it's up in the Senate.
Yeah, and it's District 105 and the whole general area. When you and I have talked about it in the past over the years, I mean, the text line fills up with people say, hey, I'm in that backlog. I'm on that list. I sure hope something gets done.
Yeah, well, I know a lot of people that are in that same predicament. And, I mean, you know, my District 105, we're talking about Dauphin Island, Bala Battery, Codin, Grand Bay, Mon-Louis Island, Hollinger's Island, Irvington. We're ground zero, really, in Mobile County for hurricanes and wind damage. So it's a big deal. And the way that works is for every $1 million, they can do 100 roofs. So it's a great program. It's funded properly because it's not funded with taxpayer dollars. It's funded by the insurance companies, and it really helps consumers. And it's just a good bill. It's a good program. And I really believe we're going to have a real good shot at passing that in the Senate. It passed more or less unanimously. Had one no vote against it, and then that individual explained to me later he didn't really understand the bill and thought it was something else, but apologized. But so it is a good program, and like I said, it's in the Senate. Should pass this week out of committee.
Well, that's what I was going to say. In the Senate, what would be the resistance to this? I mean, where would be the motivation for somebody not to vote for it?
Well, there really isn't. I mean, you know, because it, like I said, it's not taxpayer dollars, and it is a statewide program. And of course, it is extremely popular on the Gulf Coast. I don't know that a lot of people in other areas of the state are even really aware of the program, but I mean, it would help those people that are, you know, deal with tornadoes in particular in the central part of the state, in the northern part of the state. And it's just a good program. There's no opposition to it that I'm aware of. I mean, it's just something that it really took sitting down with the insurance department and getting creative. I mean, I went and sat down with them, and we had a meeting that lasted a couple of hours and said, let's work this out. Let's figure this out. I came back. I drew up some ideas. They drew up some ideas. We had kind of a meeting of the minds, and this is what came out of it.
Right. Also, give us an update here on Anaya's Law and the HB 137, the Sexual Assault Victims Bill of Rights.
Well, both of those bills are on the House calendar for this coming Tuesday, the 23rd. Anaya's Law, which, of course, is comprehensive criminal bond reform, and the way that works is that it right now, the only time an individual can be held without bond is if they're charged with capital murder. And what this bill does is it allows prosecutors to request that an individual is charged with a violent Class A felony, basically a crime against another individual, which would be your violent domestic assaults, your kidnappings, those sorts of rape, the crimes, violent crimes against another. They can request that that individual be held without bond if they feel that they're a flight risk, an imminent threat to the community, or an imminent threat to themselves. They request that from the judge, and the judge can hold an evidentiary hearing and prosecutor presents evidence of why the individual should be held without bond, and the judge can grant that request and hold the individual without bond, or he can deny it and grant bond. But what that does, it gives judges a tool to hold a dangerous person without bond, I mean, hold them, you know, in jail. And then it gives prosecutors an opportunity, to really hold someone that they know is going to be a threat to the community. I mean, all too often, we hear these cases where someone's out on bond for a very violent crime, and then they commit another violent crime. And that's the case in this instance with Anaya Blanchard, this bill is named after her, Anaya's Law. And the individual that's accused of the crime against her, saw her in a convenience store and kidnapped her, assaulted her, and killed her. He was out on a $250,000 bond for an assault, a robbery, and a kidnapping. And when he was pulled over, he had the individual in the car with him. But because it wasn't a capital case, The judge had to give him bond. He got out on $250,000 and then went and was accused of killing Anaya Blanchard. And so this, for the first time in Alabama, will be able to keep those dangerous predators behind bars. That bill is, it passed unanimously out of the House last year and unanimously out of the Senate Judiciary Committee and was scheduled to be on the floor that Thursday when we were supposed to come back, but we didn't come back because of COVID. And so it is the number one bill on the calendar on Thursday. I mean, this coming Tuesday. And then the second bill on there is, it's number six on the calendar, and it's actually the Sexual Assault Victims Bill of Rights. And this bill is one that would, it says in there that sexual assault victims will never have to pay for a rape kit or an exam. And then it also, currently under Alabama law, there's no time frame of how long evidence has to be kept in a sexual assault case. And so this says that if an individual is a juvenile, that it has to be, the evidence has to be kept until they're at least 40, and then it can be renewed for another 20 years with written notice. And then if it's an adult, it has to be kept for 20 years and then can be renewed for another 20 with written notice. And it has to, they have to provide the victims with basically an explanation of how the process works so that the individual isn't just out there on their own. And they have to notify them of any DNA matches. And it sets up a board that of law enforcement and agency heads and crime victims to review our sexual assault laws in Alabama and make recommendations. That bill is on the calendar this Tuesday.
All right, so that's number six. So you have one and six.
Well, I have actually one, two, and six. Two is the way it works in Alabama is if it's a constitutional amendment, that's what Anaya's law is. You have the actual bill, and then you have what's called the enabling legislation, and you have to pass both of those. So the enabling legislation is a separate bill that just spells out what it would read on the ballot and when the election would be held and that sort of thing. So if Anaya's law passes the House and passes the Senate, then it would be on the ballot the next general election, which would be fall of 2022.
There you go. Coming right back with Representative Chip Brown. Talk more about this also. What is taking up a lot of oxygen in the Senate is going to be heading to the House, too. That is the gaming bill. We'll talk about that when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. Midday Mobile, our guest, AL105's Chip Brown, and talking about, I do want to get to this gaming stuff, but like every time you and I talk about this and the Strengthen Alabama Homes, get a lot of questions, a lot of people texting, emailing about it, and somebody sending me an email here, an update email they got. This is somebody who had told me last time you were on that they had been on the list for a long time and were waiting their turn. They don't know when their turn is. And you said they get the funding and they do X number of roofs and then it's over until they get funding again, right?
Yeah, the way the current system works is they get funding twice a year from insurance companies. And so that would be one in the winter and one round in the summer. And they get that funding, and then however much they received in those contributions from larger insurance companies, then they go out and spend all that money on Strengthen Alabama Homes. So it's hard for them to estimate with that type of system to know exactly we're going to be able to do 200 roofs, 800 roofs. So it is frustrating. I know it is. I mean, one of the first things I did when I got elected and I was appointed to the insurance committee in the House was to go up and meet with the Strengthen Alabama Homes guys and discuss with them my problems. There were several issues that I saw with the program, and one of them was that they in my opinion haven't done, I guess they've done the best job they could, but it's tough to you have people waiting on a list, and they just want to know, hey, is it going to be a month? Is it going to be 2 years? And some people wait 2-3 years. I mean, it's just unfortunate, and that's not fair. And it's not based on it's solely based on funding. That is it. And so what that was one of the reasons why I brought this bill was that moving forward, hopefully you get in the program, you get your roof in a quick manner and not have to wait for long lengths of time. Because what happens, people need a new roof because they're in the program, and then they wait for a certain amount of time, and then they just can't wait anymore, and then they go out and they get a roof, and yep, it's probably not a fortified roof, and they're not able to take advantage of having a fortified roof. Because you can get a fortified roof on your own. You can go out and call a roofer and say, I want a fortified roof. I mean, actually, Alabama leads the nation in the number of fortified roofs, and I would say probably, you know, 80% of them at least are in Mobile and Baldwin counties. I mean, you know, after the hurricane, we went down and we viewed some, the speaker came, we went and looked at some buildings in Orange Beach and some neighborhoods, and then we drove over and looked at some on Dauphin Island. In one of the neighborhoods, we went in, every roof that had a fortified roof had no damage, and all the ones that didn't had blue tarps. So it does save you money. It saves your house. And but people just have to be patient, because we're you know, that's the purpose of my bill, is to expedite this, and so we won't have long lines anymore, people waiting.
Yeah, and the insurance companies want, I mean, that's the thing. You've got consumers wanting it, insurance companies wanting it, trying to put the two together, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, the first thing years ago when they first came out with this, and I heard, well, it's funded by insurance companies. I thought, that's weird. Why would, you know,
yeah,
why would insurance companies want to do that? That kind of goes against the norm. And but it's a good deal for insurance companies, because they have to pay out less. So when you have roof damage, particularly in this area from hurricanes and tropical storms, you have roof damage, it's less likely that they will have to pay money out to buy you a new roof, rather than if you just have a regular roof that could get lifted and loose shingles and that sort of thing. So it's good for insurance companies, but it's also good for consumers, because it results in less damage and it results in lower premiums. And actually, you know, I sponsored and passed a bill 2 years ago that said that when you take out a roof policy, you take out a homeowner's policy, and you're a new customer and you need a new roof, the insurance company has to make you aware of fortified roofs. They're supposed to make you aware of fortified roofs if you need a new roof. And then if you have roof damage, they have to offer you the opportunity to go back with a fortified roof. I mean, it's going to cost you more money, but it's going to save you more money in the long run. And so that was a good bill, in my opinion, because it prevents, or is supposed to prevent, insurance companies from running out there and settling and just saying, okay, you need a new roof here, we'll have some people next week, and then they throw up the same type roof that you had before. We did run into some issues after the storm where, you know, they bring in adjusters that aren't from here and they don't really know the law here. And so I had people calling me saying, didn't you pass a bill telling saying that they had to offer you the opportunity to go back with a fortified roof? And I said, yeah, I did. And they said, well, this guy from Texas is arguing with me saying, no, they don't have to do that. They can put back the same exact roof. And that's just not the case.
That's a great takeaway piece, Congressman. So that absolutely, if they're told they can't, that is not, the law is you can go to the fortified roof.
You can. Yeah, you actually
you can demand
if you had roof damage, they have to give you the opportunity to go back with a fortified roof. Now, it's going to cost you more because you're going to have to pay the difference in getting the fortified roof. But it's going to be worth it because you're going to save money on your premiums, and you're gonna be less likely to have damage.
Okay, I tell you what, we're up against the heartbreak. Please, can you hold on through the news, and we'll come back because I do want to talk some gaming with you. All right, good deal. Coming right back with Representative Chip Brown right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Coming right back to our conversation with AL105's Chip Brown. Man, the fortified roof stuff. We're going to get the representative booked to do like a whole hour on that because we always get so many questions out there. Right now, I want y'all to check in with my buddy, Larry Kirby, at LCM. And I know we got inventory to talk about. Inventory of what kind of vehicles?
A little bit of everything, Sean. We got trucks, cars, SUVs, mid-size SUVs, full-size SUVs, you know, two-wheel drive trucks, four-wheel drive trucks, crew cabs, container cabs. So we got a choice of just about anything.
Okay, you win on that. And if for some reason that somebody cannot find what they need out of that selection, y'all go find vehicles too.
Absolutely. We'll give it 100% effort. We don't always find everything. The inventory is getting kind of scarce now. But we usually bet above 90%.
I love it. Us talk about coming out, talking vehicle with you, also financing. How do we find you?
Come see us at Highway 90 and Plantation Road. Visit us online at lcmmotorcars.com. Like us on Facebook or just call us at 375-0068.
Thank you, Larry.
Thanks, Sean.
All right, Larry Kirby checking in from LCM. And yeah, check out that inventory. You do it online and in person. And once again, if the vehicle that you're looking for is not there, ask them. They'll go look for it for you. All right, right back to our conversation with Chip Brown, AL105, south part of Mobile County. I mean, fortified roof zone. I would say if anybody in the state would wear the T-shirt that says I'm for fortified roofs, it'd be the representative from 105.
Yeah, we are... I'm actually, you know, it's funny, people will ask me, what house district do you represent? And I'll say, well, we have 105 house districts in Alabama, and they start in the upper left corner with District 1, and they go all the way down, and 105 is as far south as you can get. Dolphin Island is the most southern spot in Alabama, and I'm House District 105. So I'm at the very bottom of the state, first in your heart.
I'm going to use that, too. All right, so let's talk about this. Outside of talking about specific bills, the bills you've been working on, let's talk about what's coming out of the Senate and Del Marsh's gaming plan. If you haven't been listening, I've been talking about it for weeks now. The idea of gaming, I get it. I mean, people have been pushing for this for a long time. We've done every unscientific poll possible around the station. People are for it, but then there comes the rest of it. Yes, they want the right of referendum, but there's a lot to this. I mean, it's not just a lottery bill we're talking about. It's all gaming, and then we're talking about only a few players being in on it and then how the money's distributed on the back end. Kind of walk us through your thoughts so far on this, what's gone through and over in the Senate.
Well, you know, it came out last week. Really, they did a very good job of keeping it under wraps of what it was going to be until you know, the governor came out during her State of the State and more or less threw it into the laps of the legislature and had the Gaming Commission study last year that they found their results in the fall, and then they presented those to the governor. And it's an interesting read if you ever get a chance. It's a pretty thick document. But Senator Del Marsh is carrying that in the Senate. It's his bill. And they released it Tuesday night, and I got a copy of it Tuesday night. They sent me an email, and a little synopsis of it as well. And so I'm still, you know, Thursday it was on the floor in the Senate, and of course we were in session on Thursday and in the House, and then they were in session up there. Then they carried it over. I think his idea was to go ahead and put it out there, have discussion, and then it's going to be back up. And I expect they will vote on Tuesday on the bill, and they will send it to the House. And I'm not exactly sure which committee. Normally that goes to economic development and tourism. I'm on economic development and tourism in the House, and so I would expect it to come to my committee.
Oh, okay.
In the past, that's where lotteries have come. So I would expect it to come there, but you never know. It might go to Judiciary Committee. But it is a constitutional amendment, and so it would be on the ballot. If it passes the House and passes the Senate, it'd be on the ballot in November of 2022.
Okay, but I want to talk about that, too, because it comes to the ballot. First of all, we have to – it's an amendment to the Constitution. So it's one of those, y'all, that we're always talking about, like, okay, here's your races for these different offices, and then we have the amendment. So it would be there. But would there be multiple amendments? Like, this First Amendment would be to change the Constitution of the state of Alabama to allow for gaming. And then the Second Amendment would be, no, it would look like this, or would it all be together in one?
It would be all one. Yeah, they're trying to do one, you know, one package where it will just be one vote, up or down. And unlike in the past, you know, we've had opportunities in the legislature, the last one being 2 years ago, for just a clean lottery bill. And when you hear that term a lot, a clean lottery bill, and what that means is that's just a standalone lottery. You're only voting on the lottery. You're not throwing in casino gaming or sports wagering or anything. It's just strictly a lottery. And we just came up short on that 2 years ago. I mean, we were literally one vote away from being able to get that through in the House. And this year they went with a multi-package that has casino gaming and the lottery all in one. And I would personally prefer to have a vote on the lottery separate and then a vote on casino gaming by itself as well.
But don't you know that, I mean, you know it better than I, that they need that lottery portion to. I'm not saying you couldn't pass the others individually, but it sure makes it easier with that, putting that lottery. You know, it helps the average to put the with the lottery in
the
other two.
Yeah, it you're exactly right. I mean, you know, it'd take a genius to figure out this. The whole impetus behind the thing is to combine the two, and it's more likely to get that through the legislature, and it's also more likely to pass on the ballot. If I mean, the lottery. We're really surrounded by, I mean, you know, states that have the lottery: Florida, Georgia, Tennessee, Mississippi, Louisiana. So, I mean, it used to be where people that bordered Mississippi could say, well, we don't want the lottery because, you know, we don't have an issue with it. But now we are totally surrounded. So really the only people in Alabama that aren't close enough to really play the lottery are the people in the center part of the state.
I mean, Chilton County.
Alabama's been playing the lottery since the 80s. We've just been playing it in other states.
That's right. You know? And other than the people from Chilton County that have to make the long ride, I think, whatever the geographic center of the state is. Other than that, yeah, they're close to it. And talk about it pragmatically like that, and I've done it for years. You can also talk about it idealistically in the right of referendum that so many people in Alabama want the right to vote on it. They should. Right. Okay, that's my problem. That's my problem, Congressman, because I think that knowledge is known, that the people want it. So therefore, it's almost like the desire of the citizens is now, well, that's already banked. We've banked that. They want this. Now we can design it however we want because the votes are in. Even if the lottery went to fund Al-Qaeda and the casinos went to fund the re-election of Xi Jinping or whatever it is, people would vote for it so we can do whatever we want with it. And I feel like that's how this hard close is being done on it. That's why it's being done.
I don't doubt it, John. I really don't. I mean, I think that, you know, the allocation, where the bill is written, it has the lottery proceeds would go towards scholarships for college scholarships and then agriculture scholarships. And actually, too, that has some provisions in there for like VOTEC. Mm-hmm. And adult education scholarships, which I'm glad that's in there. I mean, I couldn't support anything that strictly went to college scholarships because, I mean, you know, we're in a day and of age now where it used to be we wrongfully, in my opinion, geared everyone to go to college. That was the attitude. You have to be prepared to go to college. And then you have people that they don't want to go to college. They want to go straight in the workforce and work at a trade, and what that resulted in was a shortage of skilled labor, and so I'm good with that. What we're doing with the money on the education side, I do wish that we did take some of that and spent that actually in the classroom. But I do like having the scholarship money, and then the casino money be taxed at 20%, and then It goes to the general fund, which would, you know, funds prisons, mental health,
right,
literally everything else. And there's always a misconception of the general fund. I mean, you know, the way the budgets are done in Alabama, the education budget is always higher than the general fund budget. I mean, it's just the way it always is.
Plus,
I mean,
general fund is, what, 90-something percent earmarked already?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, literally everything outside of education is funded by the general fund. And, you know, this year we're spending $7.65 billion on education in Alabama and $2.45 billion on the general fund, which is...
everything, you know, else.
Everything else.
Yeah.
So there's always that. Alabama's unique in that we have two budgets. Most states have one budget, and then education is a line item in the budget. And I'm glad that we have two budgets, because you're always going to be able to protect those education dollars, because that's always a fight in other states. But by having two budgets, we never have that situation in Alabama. But we do run into a problem where the general fund is usually underfunded.
Yeah, and the casino money going into that, whatever the gaming fund or whatever that goes into the general and can deal with, you know, like these prison issues, funding ADOC and all that. I'm for that. And then the sports betting, I think, what does it also go to general fund, or where would it? I think that's...
I believe it does, Sean.
Okay.
I'd have to look at that.
I
think it does. I think it all goes to that, and it's all, you know, basically earmarked where it would go into the general fund. And then at the local level, the way that bill is written, it takes 3% and gives it to the county, and then 2% goes to the municipality that the gaming center is located in. But you take a situation like Mobile County, the dog track would be the location, but it's in the county. It's not in the city.
The city, yeah.
So you'd be
get ready for annexation.
County.
Get ready for some annexation.
Yeah. Well, I think that's kind of one of those things that really has to be worked out. I mean, the dog track allocation sent money to all of the cities in the county, and it sent money to South Alabama and money to Bishop State and other counties. Like Jefferson County, I know in particular, they're having those same types of discussions. Well, wait a minute. The Jefferson County racetrack, the allocations for it went to this, but you're trying to tell me we can't do that anymore. So those are ongoing discussions.
And that's on the back end. And before we run out of time, so on the front end is where, the things you're talking about are legitimate. I've talked about them some, and I'm interested in those. But the lowest hanging fruit to me is on the front end. And not even just like you talked about splitting out lottery from the others, but what y'all are being handed from the Senate, unless a lot changes, is a duopoly. Right? Or
you're right.
Carve out, it is not, my issue is not with the gaming. My issue is with, this is not a free market situation. This is saying these players can run casinos and that's it. Like Chip and Sean can't get together and raise capital and go get the bond and buy the property and build their, only these other people can do it. For all the people who talked about free market and business friendly and all that, that doesn't seem like anything like that to me.
Well, you're right. I mean, it's from I consider myself to be a free market capitalist, and it is definitely not that. I mean, it's it limits the number of gaming operations to what is on the list. I mean, and you look at some counties, Greene County in particular, they're losing. They actually have legalized gaming. They have bingo halls in Greene County. Most people don't realize that, but they do have that in Greene County, and then in Lowndes County they have Whitehall, which is another bingo facility, and they're losing those. Greene County gets one facility, and now they currently, I think they have five operating, so they lose those. But yeah, from a free market standpoint, it's not good. I mean, it's not a you're not opening it up. You have to be careful, I think, from the standpoint of allowing it. I think you have to have at least a number.
Yeah, you have to put a benchmark. I would agree. And so there's some pragmatism in my idealism here and say that there has to be bench. You have to build a certain kind of facility, be certain standards and all that. I'll work on that. But that means that any private group that could meet that threshold then could play in this game, pun intended, versus saying there's only a couple people complain that there's no motivation to make better casinos, have bigger shows, nicer place, smoke-free dolphin show. There's no motivation. It's going to be like a utility.
Well, and from a monetary standpoint, too.
It's a loss.
You know, I wonder about if you're setting the, you know, they set the numbers, I think it's $5 million for a 10-year lease at a Mobile facility. If they just open that up to the free market,
yeah,
then
wouldn't you get more money?
What would the market be willing to pay? I agree with you on that. I do.
All right. Well, we'll pick this conversation back up next week and talk about it more when y'all see it over in the House. I appreciate you spending all the time with us this hour, and we look forward to talking to you again.
Hey, always glad to be with you, Sean. I appreciate it.
All right. There he is, Chip Brown. Yeah, where's the T-shirt? Yeah, last on the list, but first in your heart from 105. I love it. All right, coming right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile. I guess it would be too long of a name for it to be Omaha Steaks, Pork Chops, Burgers, Kielbasa's, Caramel Apple Tartlets. I guess I got to stick with the brand and dance with the one who brung them at Omaha Steaks. And there's so much, though, to unpack here for Omaha Steaks. What makes them so darn good? It's the aging process. You know, good things come to those who wait. The nice thing is they do the aging process before we even get the steaks. And Omaha Steaks are aged at least 21 days, and that's where the magic happens. You can try their mouthwatering steaks now with their Butcher's Bestsellers package at omahasteaks.com. Here's how it works. omahasteaks.com. When you get there, enter my first name, Sean, S-E-A-N, into the search bar and save over 50% and secure exclusive pricing. Now, this package has four of their iconic fork tender butcher cut filet mignon, four ultra juicy burgers, four savory pork chops, four kielbasa sausages, four rich and decadent caramel apple tartlets, and a whole bunch more. And in addition to getting more than 50% off, you're also going to get four chicken breasts and four more of those delicious burgers for free. So go to omahasteaks.com, type my name Sean in the search bar for this special offer, and order the Butcher's Bestseller Pack today. Save over 50%, plus get the four free chicken breast and four burgers. That's omahasteaks.com. Your keyword, Sean, S-E-A-N. See what I've been talking about, S-E-A-N. Get that package today. All right, big thank you to Representative Chip Brown for joining us. Looking at the text line, a lot of people enjoyed that. Listen, this is a gray discussion. Like most discussions are, it's a gray discussion. You can be for the right of referendum on gaming in the state, right? And the lottery and sports betting and casinos, but not be for cutting a bad deal. And that's all I'm talking about. I mean, if the discussion's going to be, when it goes out of the Senate, it comes to the House, and people are saying, well, look, how could you vote against this? Look at all this revenue that goes to the ETF, and look at all this revenue that goes to general fund. And look, okay, I'm with you. Do y'all think we could get more? You think we might get more revenue if we let it open to the free market instead of having a duopoly here? And does the consumer get a better product when you have competition? Come on. And this is this truism that I'm going to challenge. Is it true? And once again, keep saying the same thing because this is what I believe. I have no problem with the McGregor Legacy Dog Track folks and Porch Bandit Creek Indians for doing with that. I'd be doing the same thing if I was working with them. I'd be trying to get the same deal. My issue is with the legislature. And if your job with the legislature is to get the best deal for the people of Alabama, for the state of Alabama, you're not doing that. And if you say, oh, well, we can't get this passed unless we have a duopoly for these players, then we got bigger problems, don't we? I mean, they talk about that, but nobody stops and says, whoa, that's not a good thing. You're telling me that unless you get the blessing, right, unless you get the blessing of those two players, there's no kind of gaming that can pass in our state. So you're telling me then, Alabama legislature, that you are so much in control to those two entities that you can't do anything without their approval, without asking a mother, may I? Let that settle for a second, all right? And we'll do it again tomorrow. be cool. I'll see you here at noon. Paul Feinbaum Show on the way next. Check this one.